You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In its annual survey of top CEO pay issued last week, the New Zealand Herald discovered that there has been a 12% increase in CEO pay packets, and 95BFM will be naming and shaming them. The top CEO pay packet went to Fletcher Building's Ross Taylor, and Mr. Taylor, please come on BFM's Friday Wire, I would love to interview you, who took home a mammoth $5.3 million. Income inequality is harmful across the board. The gap between the wealth of CEOs and the wealth of their lowest paid workers impacts health, well-being and education of our society. With no empirical justification that high CEO pay increases productivity and profitability, it would seem that high pay is simply an insult to the lowest paid workers. I talked to Peter Malcolm, the National Secretary of Closing the Gap, which is a part of Income Equality New Zealand. I first asked what Closing the Gap does and what did the annual survey discover.
Closing the Gap is about getting out there the information, the research that shows very clearly that income wealth inequality, that is the gap between the high income earners and the poor, and the very wealthy and the poor, has significant social and economic and cultural impacts. For example, the higher the those gaps, the more health effects that are noticed. For example, there are higher rates of suicide, there are higher rates of teenage pregnancies, there are higher rates of health, heart attacks, higher rates of all of those sorts of things are clearly linked to increases in income wealth inequality. The reason for that is that we are apparently, according to the psychologist, driven by a sense of status in society. And if we are not top dogs, then we suffer quite significant psychological impacts of that. Most people won't admit to that, but apparently the research shows very clearly that that's true. Of course, the people on the very top, they're quite happy where they were, but the people just below them suffer the same effects, and the effects get worse as you come down the income wealth scale. So what we want to do is to get that information out there and persuade, in particular, the politicians, because the income wealth inequality in fact is in the hands of the politicians. One of the things that we're pushing for is to have changes to the tax scale. In fact, I'm writing a paper for Grant Robertson right now about how to do that, and to summarise it very quickly, we need a much more progressive tax system. You know, at the moment we have, even though some people will tell you not, at the moment we have a relatively flat tax system which cuts in, I think the bottom levels cut in almost immediately, and they go up to a maximum of 33 cents in the dollar if for incomes over 70,000 a year. Now, if I go back to my earlier life when I was actually in work, my top tax rate was 66 cents in the dollar, so there was a huge difference. And at that time, if you go around the world, in Britain, the top tax rate, I think, was 98 cents in the dollar. So you can see we have moved, the politicians have moved us, from a relatively progressive, steeply progressive tax system to one which is pretty flat. So we're trying to persuade the politicians that, in fact, we need to go back to a much more progressive tax system. Second thing is about wealth, and we've moved away from many aspects of wealth taxation in the past. We used to have in what are called wealth transfer taxes, like inheritance taxes and gift duty. We need to go back to those sorts of things because that helps reduce the gap between the wealthy and the poor. Now, flying in the face of all of this, of course, when you look at the stats as to what is happening to the income of people at the top have had very significant income increases over the last 30 years, whereas those at the bottom have had much, much smaller, by a factor of about 6, ranging from at the top about 12 to 14% over a 30-year period, down at the bottom an average of 1 or 2%. And so when the research shows more clearly just those people at the top are getting ahead much faster than those at the bottom, obviously we need to make a noise about it, and that's why I put out that media release on the pay of top CEOs.
Right. I guess what immediately jumped out at me is it really possible to regulate the salaries of CEOs if they have so much power? Because we've seen them making political donations and even moving into politics themselves, like Christopher Luxon, who is the New Zealand CEO. Is it fundamentally impossible to control them?
Oh, never, never. Never, never. I say that for two reasons, for several reasons. First is that if it wasn't possible, I'd have given up long ago. I'm not a believer in failed causes, and so if I didn't believe it was possible, I'd have given it away. Secondly, if you look at the history of inequality, we've gone through ups and downs. For example, that in the early 20th century, the financial crash in 1928-29, we had very high levels of inequality. And that, of course, changed over the next years. And right through after the Second World War, we had relatively low levels of inequality. And then in the late 70s, early 80s, we had Thatcher and Reagan telling us that the way forward was to adopt the so-called neoliberal approach to the world, which said that if we don't let the rich get very wealthy, then that will stagnate the economy, that will lead to a drop or a drop in innovation, that'll lead to all sorts of bad effects. But if we do allow the wealthy, the high-income people to get more and more money, the trickle-down effect will occur and their wealth will spread down to the lower levels. Now, that change was brought about in the United States, by Ronald Reagan, in the UK, by Margaret Thatcher, and then in New Zealand, it was brought about by the Douglas changes in the late 1980s. And then was reinforced by Ruth Richardson in the early 90s. And so it was political action that in fact made those changes. So there's the first point, is that it is possible to get the politicians to make some changes. Second point that you raise, of course, is the one about influence. That's one of the really serious side effects of increasing inequality, is that the wealth become more entrenched in their positions of power. The ultimate example of that, of course, is the United States, where both the Senate and the House are basically ruled by the corporate America.
Yeah.
Because they supply the politicians with lots and lots of money to get out and advertise their particular approach, and so if they're not on side with corporate America, then they lose contact with all that money, which helps ensure that they get back into power again. Now, we haven't quite reached that stage in New Zealand, although there's been some interesting statements about foundations for various political parties in New Zealand, but I don't believe that we've got that far in New Zealand yet. One of the reasons for this is that we do have access to the politicians and we can talk to them, and although we don't know who else is talking to them, my personal experience is that you can talk to the politicians and they do indeed listen. My contacts with Grant Robertson would be a case in point, where he is interested in what I seem to have to say. Here in Tauranga, we have a particularly strong Closing the Gap branch, and we are in regular communication with the politicians, although I must admit that we've struggled to get contact with Simon Bridges, but I have quite regular meetings with Todd Muller from the National Party. We certainly have regular meetings with the Labor people, and so on and so forth, and the odd meeting with the Greens as well. So we do have access to our politicians, so we do have the opportunity to counteract the effect of big money. So that's why I'm optimistic about continuing to do the work that I do and the work that Closing the Gap does and the other organisations up and down the country who are really concerned about these issues.
So in terms of shaming and pressuring CEOs, do you think it will take just politics or a more organised effort with workers' unions and community groups?
Oh, all of those, both of those. There is no question, for example, the living wage people, you know, have made great strides in doing something about wages at the bottom. And you know, the current coalition government has agreed to lift the minimum wage in steps. They haven't gone as far as having the living wage as the target, but they certainly are under some pressure by those groups to lift the wages of those at the bottom. So there's a good example of where we have had some influence. The second is that the current government have put out, have asked for a whole lot of reports, and one of the reports, which I think is very important, that from the Welfare Expert Advisory Group. Now, that report was delivered to government now for, 6 months ago? And it made some very strong recommendations because, of course, many of the poor, in fact, I think almost the majority of the poor, are beneficiaries. And there is no question that we need to do something about that. The prevailing view from the other side, of course, is that if you make their lives too good, they won't strive to get out of it themselves. They don't realise that many of those people don't have the skills or the ability or the emotional fortitude to get themselves out of that situation. And the research shows very clearly that the way to help those people is to give them some adequate money for them to live decent lives, and then they will get themselves into a much better position. Now, the noises that I'm hearing is that welfare expert advisory group report was well received by the government, but of course it does, if it was fully implemented, it would cost the country, I think, I'm going completely on memory here, about $7 billion extra a year. Now, that's interesting from several points of view. Firstly, it does clearly indicate the size of the problem. If that's the shortage of money amongst the beneficiaries in this country, that ought to be a huge push to do something about it. The second is because the size of the money, of course, the coalition government have been very cautious not to overspend, but I'm hopeful that now that they've put a lot of money into infrastructure, they still haven't lost sight of the concept of well-being, so that their next step will be to do something significant about the beneficiaries in the country. So there's a good example of where the government are in fact taking some action over those issues, and that of course encourages me to keep going to try and do something at the top end.
I'll just
make the point is that I've had lots of discussions with people about what to do about very high incomes. There have been a number of suggestions, for example, that there should be some sort of regulation that says that the ratio between the CEO and the lowest paid worker should never be greater than, you know, 10 to 1. In some parts of the world, in the United States in particular, that ratio is now in the thousands to 1, to give you an idea of the level of inequality in the United States. In New Zealand, I think the highest is about 300 to 1. Now, that would be one way of doing it. I don't think that would be very successful. I think the answer is through a much more steeply progressive tax system. And some of the world economists would go along with that, people like Joseph Stiglitz, people like, what's his name, Piketty, the French economist, people like Krugman, the another American economist, reckon that we could increase the top tax rate well into the 70% rate. You know, that's the marginal tax rate I'm talking about, without the sorts of effects that fake news would tend to suggest, that it would destroy innovation, it would destroy people's ability to work hard and so on and so forth. The research shows very clearly that that's not true at all, which is why these world economists are saying that we could quite well go back to these much, much higher tax rates. So that would be, I think, a much more effective way of reducing the income of those at the top. Just a point there that one of the issues that over the last probably 30 years is that benefits, I think the agreement or the prevailing view is that benefits should be targeted. There's a serious problem with that, is that the moment you try and target benefits, in other words, you mean test them, a significant number of those people who need them don't get them because they don't have the ability to not game the system. They don't have the ability to see their way through the system. My view is that if we had a much more steeply progressive tax rate, then you pay everybody the benefits, but you claw it back from the wealthy through the tax system. So there's another reason for a change to the current tax system.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.